Welcome to Torah Timecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Chana Meira Katz, and today we'll be studying Parshat Vayera. So, this week's Parsha has 147 Pesukim, and it is 4 Prakim long from Yudchet to Chafbet. This week's Parsha has some very fundamental stories, some of them that we read again on Rosh Hashanah, so we should all know about them. It starts off with Hashem visiting Avram on the third day after his Bris Milah. And while Hashem is visiting, Avram notices 3 travelers passing by, and he rushes to invite them into his home. And we have a description of Avram's unbelievable hachnasat orchim. He does not realize that these 3 travelers are actually angels in disguise. And these angels inform Avram that Sarah will give birth to a child in exactly a year's time. Sarah overhears this conversation, and she laughs to herself because she can't believe that she'll have a child. She's way past childbearing age. And Hashem is upset with Sarah with her lack of emunah. Now, it's just something interesting about these psukim. When the first 3 psukim introduce that Hashem appears to Avram, it doesn't actually mention what Hashem says to him or what conversation went on. It just goes straight into the story of the 3 visitors, which leads to a lot of debate between the different commentators who is speaking to who. So Rashi will say that it says, Vayar elav Hashem, Hashem appeared to him. And then before it even says what Hashem said, it says, Vayisa enav, Avram lifts his eyes and he sees the 3 men. So Avram says, Vayomer, and then it's vocalized either as Hashem, that he's talking to God, or Adoni, but with a comet, so it sounds like Hashem's name, my master. Either he turns quickly to the 3 men and addressing the man in the middle, he says, please, don't turn away. Come to me and please have some food. Or he says to Hashem, Hashem, please don't leave me. Don't turn away. I just want to deal with my guests. To which the Gemara in Masechet Shabbos says that Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rav, Gadol hachnasat orchim mehakabalat pnei hashechina. Having guests is greater than receiving the shechina. From here we learn how fundamentally important it is to do the mitzvah of hachnasat orchim. Ramban has a wild explanation where he believes the entire scene with the Malachim is just a vision. It never really happened. But he is more revolutionary in his opinion. And most people say, no, it actually did happen. And when we go into our deeper discussion of the parasha, I would like to come back to the story. In the next aliyah, the angels leave and Avram escorts them on their journey. So we learn the halacha that part of hachnasat orchim is actually escorting your guests. And they're going to Sodom. Their mission is to destroy the cities and rescue Lot. As soon as they leave, Hashem decides to inform Avram of his intention to destroy Sodom. And Avram argues with Hashem, bargaining for the lives of these wicked people of Sodom. Avram asks Hashem if he will destroy the wicked together with the righteous. And he asks if there are at least 50 righteous people, would he spare Sodom? And then he goes down to 45, 40, slowly going down until he gets to 10. And when there are not even 10 righteous people in Sodom, he stops negotiating. After that, there's no resolution of the conversation. We just shift the scene to Sodom. So in the third aliyah, the Malachim enter Sodom. And Lot is sitting by the gate. He's waiting for guests. He tells him to come into his house, but he tells him, don't wash off the sand of your feet. Whereas Avram said, wash off the sand. He bakes their matzahs. He serves them. But then the people of the city find out that Lot has guests. They surround his house, the entire city, from the greatest to the smallest, and they all unanimously demand that Lot hand over the guests so that they can assault them. The Malachim strike all those surrounding the house with blindness, and then they inform Lot of their mission, and they tell him that he has to flee. And Lot tries to get his married daughters and sons-in-law to go with, and they laugh at him. They say, what are you talking about? The city of Sodom is pumping. Why would we leave? So Lot takes his wife and his 2 daughters, and actually it says the Malachim have to drag him out. In fact, the word used when Lot is hesitating is Vayismahama, and there's a shalshelet on top. Shalshelet is a cantillation, and it makes you sing the word, like sort of dray it, to show that he was really dithering because he just couldn't decide what to take with him, which made his leaving prolonged, and in the end he had to leave empty-handed. And that's mida keneged, mida measure for measure, because he originally came to the land of Sodom for financial gain because he wanted to put his money in front of his morals, and now he has to flee empty-handed. In the fourth aliyah, Hashem destroys Sodom. He rains fire and sulfur and overturns it, and the once lush, fertile area becomes absolutely barren. Lot's wife looks back and she turns into a pillar of salt. As Lot and his daughters are running away,
The pasuk shifts for a second to Avram, and it says, "Vayashkem Avraham baboker el makom asher amad sham es pnei Hashem." The next morning, Avram hurried to their place where he had had his vision the day before, and he stands before Hashem. Chazal tell us Avram was the first one to daven the prayer of Shacharis, first tefillah of the morning, praying for the welfare of Lot, that he should survive.
Lot and his daughters take shelter in a cave, and they assume that it's the end of the world, that no one's left. So Lot's daughters make their father drunk, and then they seduce him in order to repopulate the world. A lot of echoes of what happened with Noach and with Ham, but in this case, the daughters really acted l'shem shamayim, and the two children that are born from this liaison will be Moav, who is from my father, which is the son of the oldest daughter.
The younger daughter was more modest than her sister. She didn't want to reference that her child was born from incest. So instead, she called her son Ben Ami, son of my people. And he eventually started the nation of Ammon.
Because of the scandal of Lot and his daughters, Avram has to relocate. And he moves to Gerar. And there, very similar to what happened with Paro, Avimelech sees Sarah, kidnaps her. And then he is struck with a disease, and Hashem actually comes to him in a dream and demands that he return Sarah to Avram.
This time, Avimelech gives wealth to Avraham and a personal monetary gift to Sarah as proof that he, number one, has not touched Sarah, and number two, recognizes the validity of their relationship and no one is allowed to touch them, which is in contrast to Paro. Paro first gave gifts, took Sarah, and then threw them out of the land. Avimelech first take Sarah, then give gifts, and he gives money to Sarah and forbids anyone from touching her. So Sarah this time gets money in a dignified way in comparison to what happened in Lech Lecha. And finally, it says that Avram davened for Avimelech that he should be healed from the disease that Hashem punished him with. And immediately afterwards, it says that Sarah was remembered. From here, Chazal teach us that somebody who davens for his friend and he's suffering from the same thing, he'll be answered first. So Avram davened on behalf of Avimelech, and the very next pasuk, Sarah is remembered and has a child at 90, and they call him Yitzchak, and Yitzchak receives a brit at 8 days old. In the fifth aliyah, as Yitzchak grows up, he has a feast because he's being weaned, and Sarah notices Yishmael. He is misachek, and the Gemara brings different verses to prove it could either mean he's involved in idol worship or immorality or in murder, and she doesn't want this negative influence on her son. Also, according to the code of Hammurabi, if there is a child of a slave and a child of the main wife, if the master in his life does not distinguish between the two of them, then after the master dies, they split the inheritance equally. And Sarah wants her son to be the one who carries on the destiny of the Jewish people. So she demands that Avram sends Ishmael away. Even though Avram is initially reluctant, Hashem says, whatever Sarah says, listen to her voice. So Hagar and Ishmael go to the desert, they get lost, they become dehydrated, and Yishmael becomes dangerously ill. So Hagar does not want to witness Yishmael's death. She puts him under a tree and she walks away. And it says that Hashem listened to Yishmael's cries, and an angel comes, opens Hagar's eyes, and points out where a well of water was. Yishmael grows up and becomes a skilled archer. And it's very interesting that we read this section on Rosh Hashanah for the famous words that we read in Pasuk Yud Zayin. Kishama Elokim et kol hanar, Hashem heard the voice of the young boy, who's actually 17, ba'asher hu sham, he judged him as he was in that moment, not for his wicked deeds in the future. We learn from here that we've judged on Rosh Hashanah as we are at that moment. In the sixth aliyah, Avimelech again interacts with Avram, and he wants to make a treaty with him where neither will harm the other. And Avram uses this opportunity to complain to Avimelech that every time he digs up wells, they get stolen by Avimelech's subjects. So they make a peace treaty, and then Avram digs a well, plants an orchard, and he calls it Be'er Sheva, and he proclaims the name of Hashem to all passerbys. It's the first Chabad house in history. And then in the seventh aliyah, Hashem commands Avram to take Yitzchak and offer him up as a korban. And we have the very dramatic scene, which we read every year on Rosh Hashanah. He brings up everything needed, and it's very interesting that it says three times that they went yachdav, together. Avram on his side, even though he's going to perform the most painful of all the tests, and it's so difficult for him, he still stands next to Yitzchak and encourages him, even though it would be easier to actually emotionally distance, he doesn't do that.
Yitzchak trusts his father and trusts Hashem, even though he knows what's happening, and he goes along willingly. Yitzchak is 37 at this point. He's not a little boy, but he agrees and he goes with it. Just as Avram is about to perform the actual sacrifice of Yitzchak, an angel calls out and says, "Al tishlach yadcha lanar, don't touch this boy."
So Avram lifts his eyes and he notices a ram caught in the thicket, and he offers that ram instead. And the horns from that ram become a shofar, the shofar that we blow every Rosh Hashanah, where we ask Hashem to forgive us in the merit of the Akedat Yitzchak. The parasha ends with Avram finding out that Rivka had been born. And this is sort of like a stay tuned, because this is going to be important information in next week's parasha. I want to look into one aspect of this parasha in a bit more depth. There's really so much in this parasha, we can just keep going. But there's one idea I want to explore a little bit. Keeping in mind our overarching theme of Hashem infused the world with bracha, and mankind's task in this world is to find that bracha and spread it amongst the world. So the beginning of the parasha starts off comparing two stories of Hachnasat Archim. On the one hand, you have the Hachnasat Archim of Avraham, and then you have the Hachnasat Archim of Lot. What does Avraham's Hachnasat Archim look like? So in the beginning, you see that he is talking to Hashem, but as soon as he notices the Archim, he jumps up and stops what he's doing and facilitates looking after the guests. We see that he asks him to please dust off their feet because he doesn't want the dust of idol worship in his house. In fact, he doesn't even bring them into his house. He has a special place for them to eat outside of the house. He's also rushing a lot. He does everything with great speed. But what really strikes us is how he involves the entire family. He asks Sarah to please make the dough. He asks Yishmael to help him prepare the meat. And everybody is working together, his entire household, to do this Hachnasat Archim. In contrast, if you look at the Hachnasat Archim of Lot, it's very different. Lot is lurking by the gates, waiting for somebody to come. So it's not like he drops everything for the guests. He's got nothing else to do except wait for guests. He has to beg them to come to the house. They really are reluctant. And when they do, he says, "Don't wash your feet in case anyone sees you. I want them to think that you've just arrived." But what really strikes us is he is alone. He does everything by himself. He makes the food. He serves the food. In fact, the Midrash says that when his wife found out, she was furious and she split the house in two. She said, "You can have half the house and put the guests in your half. Don't put them in my half." He's very alone in what he does. And the fact that Avram is able to include his family into what he's doing is actually what the Mefarshim say was the final action that tipped the scale in his favor and allowed him to be worthy of children. This is why our Haftarah talks about the Isha Shunamit who didn't have children, but she had Hachnasat Archim towards Elisha. So Elisha rewards her with having children. The mitzvah of Hachnasat Archim is a segula for children, but more than that, because Avram is invested in including his entire household in what he does, Hashem says, "Ki yedativ, for I have known him, leman asher yetzaveh et panav, that he will command his children, ve'et beito, in his house, acharav, after him, v'shamru derech Hashem, and they will guard the way of Hashem, they'll keep the way of Hashem, lasot tzedaka u'mishpat, to do righteousness and justice." The reason Hashem wants to invest in Avram is not going to keep what he learns to himself. Rather, he is going to teach his family and train his family to follow in his ways. And in fact, because Hashem knows that Avram will train his family, Hashem is more active in training Avram. And the next story is how Hashem explains to Avram why he is going to destroy Sodom. And he allows Avram to bargain with him, which is very interesting, because if you compare it to when Eov complains to Hashem, Hashem says to him, "Where were you when I made the world? You think you understand how things work? Don't question me." With Avram, he allows him to negotiate with him. And it's a very interesting discussion because originally Avram's very outspoken. He says, "Ha'av tispet tzadikim rasha," you'll sweep away the innocent with the guilty. And then he starts negotiating. Maybe there'll be 50 tzadikim. And then when he realizes they're not 50, then he's a bit more humble. And he says, "You know, maybe there's 5 less." And Hashem says, "No, there's not even 45. Then he says, "I'm just dust and ashes. You know, don't mind me. But what if there's 41, and slowly, as he bargains down, he becomes more and more humble till he realizes that there's nobody to save, and then he doesn't question Hashem anymore. But we see how Hashem actively brings him in to explain to him what he's doing. He's making him an active partner because he knows that just like he teaches Avraham, Avraham will teach his family. And it's very interesting because we notice a shift in the beginning in Parshas Bereishis and Noach. Hashem was looking for one individual who will change the world, and that model didn't work. So now Hashem chooses an individual who will work just with his family. And as that family expands and grows into a nation, they become the Or LaGoyim who will teach the world. We see Avraham the rest of the parasha struggling to get this balance between tzedakah and mishpat, figuring out the balance between when to be kind, when to be firm. So for example, when Sarah wants Avraham to chase away Yishmael, at first Avraham feels this is wrong. But Hashem is training him. He says, listen to Sarah, whatever she says, you should do. There are times where you have to be kind and there are times where you have to be firm. And sometimes Avraham slips up when he makes the peace treaty with Avimelech. The Mefarshim say he was wrong to do that. He was too kind. And then we see through the successive parshiot, the Avot and Imot are going to struggle with this balance between tzedakah and mishpat, but slowly, slowly, they're going to get more proficient until eventually their family becomes a nation and that nation receives the Torah. And we will get a written code and an oral code of what it means to live lives of tzedakah and mishpat. But just getting a Torah is not enough. We have to actually model it with our family. And this is why Avraham Avinu was chosen. When we involve our family in what we do and what we believe in, then it sticks, then we can pass it on, and we can really become a source of bracha to the world. So our lesson from this parasha for the week is to involve our family in all the good things that we do. Obviously, just like the parasha talked about Hachnasat Archim, we can involve our children in Hachnasat Archim, but when we give tzedakah, we should have our children sit next to us and give them a choice of one or two good causes they might want to give tzedakah to. If we have a problem, they should listen to us, call a rabbi and discuss it with him so that they know that we consult Dad Torah. All the different things that we do good in our life, we should actively model for our children because this is how they learn. And this is how we continue our wonderful Masorah, our chain of bracha, and really illuminate the world to be a better place. Have a wonderful week.